Yeah, movie review time right here on 720 WGN on a Saturday night. A little early, but we're going to get it in right now. We welcome Colin Suter and Eric Childress to the show, who are from eFilmCritic.com. Colin, welcome.
Hello there.
And Eric, welcome.
Thank you.
How are you guys?
Okay.
Good. All right. I got to tell you, I did not see Left Behind.
What?
I'm sorry.
Oh.
I didn't have time.
I don't know if we can go on, Colin.
Well, I'm sorry, but I had to see other things, you know what I mean? So
I know.
All right. All right.
You just had to watch the last 20 minutes. You couldn't just peek your head into a theater was at that point? No.
No.
That's the interesting part. I'm not surprised. I was at a theater this morning for a screening, and after the film, I peeked into a theater that was playing Left Behind to see if anybody was in there, and nobody was in there. That theater was empty. So,
well, they got taken to heaven.
I was going to say, isn't that part of what the movie's about?
There's nothing but clothing on all the seats for some reason. Very strange.
Yeah. Yeah, because evidently you get taken into heaven naked.
Right.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Now, I have not seen the Kirk Cameron version either. Have you guys seen the Kirk Cameron version?
I have.
Oh, boy. Are they close?
Close? Well, I put it on it's on Netflix. In fact, all three of the old Left Behind movies are streaming on Netflix, if you're so curious.
Wow.
I put it on one night while I was just doing work around the apartment, just having it on as background noise. And you know what? Here's the deal. Just go on YouTube and look up Oh God, Left Behind, and you'll see the funniest line reading of the phrase "Oh God" you'll ever hear in a movie.
Okay,
it cracked me up, and that basically sums up the whole film. It's so terrible.
Okay, all right. Well, we got to do some on demand stuff. As you know, we cover on demand, and we take your phone calls, and we cover all the new movies as well. A lot of stuff to talk about tonight, and you guys will be hanging with me till like 10:30. So that's cool. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. All right, on demand. And I got to tell you, there are at least two or three on-demand movies on this list that I'm really, really excited about.
A lot of horror.
Yeah, there is a lot of horror. But let's start with the first one. It's the ABCs of Death 2. Now, explain the concept of these movies.
Yeah, well, the ABCs of Death, that's the original, and this one, it's 26 short films by 26 different directors. Each of them were given a random letter to make a film about, and they had to come up with a word that corresponded to something dealing with death.
Right.
And then they would make a short film about it. And the first movie was just over 2 hours long. This one is just over 2 hours long. You've got all these short films, you're gonna have some hits, some misses, probably even some even more misses. The first one I was kind of 50-50 on, and I kind of gave a slight recommendation to it because some of the ones were pretty clever and appropriately scary or gross. I've gotten through H in this movie so far until my screener crapped out on me. I haven't seen a lot through the H to bump up the percentage.
Okay.
Really. And there are a number of few recognizable horror names in here. Vincenzo Natale, who did Splice, did one of the segments. The Soska twins, who did American Mary, did one. They do the T segment. Bill Plimpton does one.
The animator?
He does the H segment.
The animator?
Bill Plimpton, the animator, which is odd because the D was an animated film, not the H one. I think that's right where I crapped out.
Wow.
Right around the age.
Okay.
So there you go. If you like the first one, you might want to take a look at the new one.
I thought the first one was spotty at best.
Oh yeah, it's definitely spotty, but there are a few choice ones in there that I thought were worth looking at.
Yeah. All right. The next one is a movie called Copenhagen.
Yeah, and this is a film that actually was chosen for our festival earlier this year, though I have to say I'm a little embarrassed that I still haven't seen all of it. It's a story of, the tagline is, when the girl of your dreams is half your age, it's time to grow up. And it's about a young old man who is in Copenhagen, and he meets this young 14-year-old girl, and they form a friendship. So it's... You know, it's got kind of that beautiful girls kind of vibe to it,
sure,
in a way, where she's clearly, far more mature than he is. Everyone that saw it, who chose the film, really liked it. So this is one I'm definitely going to catch up with.
You know what? I did see it. My eyes sort of glossed over the title when I looked at the list there, and I'm embarrassed to say that I just didn't catch it. But I did see this film, and I liked it. I recommend getting it. It sounds kind of uncomfortable, and it is in a few spots, but it's handled very well. And the actress in it, let me find her, Frederique. Oh man, I can't pronounce this. Frederiki Dahlhansson is terrific. She's great. Okay. She makes the movie worth seeing. So I recommend it.
Cool. All right. The next one on the list is the one that I'm most excited about. Well, there's two that I'm very excited about, and this is definitely one of them. Harmontown.
Yeah, this is a documentary about Dan Harmon, the creator of Community, which we all love. It's about the tour of his podcast series after he was fired from Community between the third and the fourth seasons. This movie premiered at South by Southwest. I didn't get to see it there. I haven't had a chance to get a screener of it yet. I hear good and to mix things about it. I don't hear anyone really breaking bad on it. I think there have been some comparisons to Conan O'Brien Can't Stop in a way, but not quite as good as that movie was. But it's definitely, if you're a fan of Dan Harmon, from what I'm hearing, it's worth checking out.
Yeah, I'm a huge fan. I saw the trailer for it, and it looks great. So I'm very, very excited about it.
Yeah.
That's Harmontown for all you Community fans out there, and it's available on demand right now. All right, guys, we got to take a quick break. We'll come back, wrap up the on-demand, and then get to the other stuff. Hold on. All right. Colin and Eric are with me, and you can join us, too, at 312-981-7200. More movie reviews coming up, and we'll take care of some more of the on-demand stuff. You can just order it in your house. Nick DiGilio here. Yeah, movie reviews. That's what we're doing right now. A little bit early than normal, but we're doing them. And I've got Eric Childress here and Colin Suter, both from eFilmCritic.com, and they're joining us. And we are currently taking care of all the on-demand movies. All right. Welcome back, guys.
Thank you.
All right. So the next one on our list of on-demand films that are available now, The Hero of Color City.
I think this might be the movie you need to watch, Nick, for penance for not seeing Left Behind. It's an animated film. A diverse band of crayons strive to protect not only their magical, multi-hued homeland, but the imagination of children everywhere from a terrifying monster.
Wow.
With voice work by Christina Ricci, Sean Astin, Owen Wilson as Ricky the Dragon.
My boy Craig Ferguson provides a voice.
Uh-huh. Wayne Brady, Elizabeth Daly, and Rosie Perez.
Wow.
You might watch this movie.
Yeah. That's pretty strong voice talent, man. Wow. All right. A bunch of crayons running around.
Mm-hmm.
All right, cool. It's only 77 minutes.
Yeah.
Well, you got to like that.
You can do that.
Yeah, sure. All right, the next one is the other one that I'm very excited about, and I know that you've already seen this one.
I have.
And you talked about it a little bit on my show. From what film festival did you see it at?
This was at, where was this? Toronto.
Okay.
Last year. Toronto from last year.
Okay.
And this is, it's called Horns, and it's the new film from Alexandra Aya, or however you pronounce his name.
Right.
Your boy.
I love him.
Yeah. And based on a novel by Joe Hill, who is Stephen King's son?
Yes. Is
that correct? That's correct.
Yes.
And it has all the makings of a Stephen King-type story. Daniel Radcliffe plays a guy whose girlfriend has been murdered, and he is suspected as being the murderer. He sort of becomes the town pariah, he wakes up one morning and finds that some horns are growing out of his skull. as he tries to discover exactly why this is happening to him, anyone he comes into contact with these horns are basically forced to sort of tell the truth in their own little dirty little secrets. Again, like I said, it has all the makings of a Stephen King story. And whether it's operating on that level, it's very entertaining. I think Radcliffe is very good in the film. It's a really, really good cast. You know, Temple, Heather Graham, James Remar is in the film, David Morse, Max Minghella, Kathleen Quinlan. I forgot she was in it, too. But the movie then just sort of becomes kind of a routine murder mystery story, and a very predictable one at that. And it does, you know, it manages to keep the supernatural thing going, but the element of these people, you know, the town being forced to tell the truth, just kind of falls by the wayside a little bit, as it just becomes at the service of this really pedestrian murder mystery. Yeah. If you can't figure out who the killer is very early on, you haven't seen like three movies. It's kind of, you know, starts off with a lot of promise and just kind of gets pretty disappointing. That's
too bad. I'm really looking forward to that one. Another horror movie coming up next. Inner Demons. What do we got here?
Yeah, well, this is this is another exorcism movie. Basically, a young woman who has got some drug issues. Apparently, uses the drugs basically to keep whatever demons are inside her at bay. So she gets sent up to a rehabilitation facility, and she's being followed by basically sort of a rehab type reality show. So the movie it's kind of halfly, half-assed done found footage type stuff, and it's kind of unfortunate because the movie actually tries to have an emotional hook to it, with one of the people on the film crew actually taking a liking to the girl and actually wanting to help her out. And this is a really interesting movie to sort of look at, as how found footage movies tend to eliminate any sort of possible emotional hook you might have with the actual characters.
Oh, okay.
It really puts things at a distance. If this movie would have played it out straight as just a full narrative without the found footage gimmick, this film might have been a little bit more interesting. So it's not as bad as some of the exorcism movies we've had this year, The Possession of Michael King. It's kind of disappointing, and the found footage literally ruins it.
Okay, all right. Next is a documentary, another documentary about Naz.
Yeah, the Time is Illmatic, a feature-length documentary film that delves into the making of Nas's 1994 debut album, Illmatic, and the social conditions that influence its creation.
So they waited 20 years?
I don't even know what a Nas is.
They waited 20 years for this?
I don't know what it is.
Yeah.
I don't even know what it is. I don't know.
All right, and then Nymphomaniac, the Extended Director's Cuts, Volume 1 and 2. I mean, how much longer can they be?
I think it's like over 4 hours combined now. Oh. I think it's like 258 minutes, if I'm not mistaken. I might be shortcutting it there even.
Okay. And then the next one is Open Windows. This is a thriller, right?
Yeah, this one's a little more of a thriller. Nacho Vigalondo, a lot of people liked Time Crimes from a few years ago.
Yeah.
And this one's got Elijah Wood as the movie has this gimmick, basically, with Elijah Wood believes that he's won this internet sweepstakes, basically this contest to have a date with this actress played by Sasha Grey. Turns out, though, that this whole sweepstakes thing, this contest, was a ruse to basically implicate him in this weird game that this psycho has devised to kidnap this actress and get her on film doing some really, unsavory things.
Yeah.
The gimmick of the movie, though, is that it's basically done as if you're looking at a computer screen. So the title Open Windows refers to all the various windows that are open throughout the screen, and it kind of has it's like Brian De Palma on crack in a way. It's like all these, it's split screen to the nth degree, and it's a fascinating way for, again, a little while to do the movie. By the last third, though, the movie really just completely goes off the rails with twist after twist after twist, one making less sense than the next, until a very unsatisfying ending. It's a real shame, because I thought this really had potential to be sort of a kind of an interesting cult classic, and it just goes downhill real quick.
Okay. All right, let's take a quick break here. We got one more on-demand movie, and then we'll get to the movies that are in theaters this week. And if you want to jump in at any time, it's 312-981-7200. Hang on, guys. We'll take a quick break here on 720 WG, and the news is next. Nick DiGilio here. We are live in the Allstate Showcase studio over here looking out on Michigan Avenue. And we're here till midnight. And coming up after 11 o'clock, our buddy Dan Feinberg from HitFix.com is going to join us to talk TV. All of the tons of new shows have started, and we'll talk about that as well. We've got Drunks in the News brought to you by the greatest restaurant on the planet, the Gale Street Inn. Straight Out of Context and Nick D Show Spies all coming up after 10:30. Right now, though, Colin Suter and Eric Childress join me as they do every Saturday, and we were reviewing all the new movies and wrapping up the on-demand stuff. Colin, welcome, and Eric, welcome.
Hello. Hello.
All right, so this last one is based on a Stephen King a short story that he also wrote the screenplay.
Yes, yes. It's called A Good Marriage.
Okay.
It's a story that I'm not too familiar with, but stars Joan Allen and Anthony LaPaglia as a husband and wife, and after 25 years of a good marriage, what will Darcy do once she discovers her husband's sinister secret?
Hmm.
Okay. Tune in to find out.
Yeah. Well, interesting other members of the cast. Stephen Lang is in it.
Stephen Lang, Kristen Connolly from Cabin in the Woods.
Yeah, from Cabin in the Woods, which I'm showing Tuesday night, by the way.
There you go.
At the Movieco Theater in Rosemont. So, yeah, make your reservations now. Cabin in the Woods, a great, great, great movie. Very entertaining. And we are showing it on Tuesday night. We'll meet at 7 at Bogart's on the second floor for some drinks. And then the movie starts at 8. So come and see Cabin in the Woods, a great horror movie in time for Halloween. It's only $10 to get in. Parking and popcorn are free. So come on out. Movie starts at 8 this Tuesday. Cabin in the Woods at the Movieco Theater in Rosemont. Reserve your seats now so they're waiting for you when you get there. In the beautiful Premier Theater. You can check it out at movieco.com, M-U-V-I-C-O. Come see Cabin in the Woods Tuesday night. You guys going to come to that?
Hoping to.
Okay. Colin, you going to be there?
Possibly. I'm not sure.
Okay. All righty then. All right. Well, then, Colin, why don't you tell us about Men, Women, and Children. Now we're into the theatrical movies. Men, Women, and Children.
All right. Well, this is an ensemble piece of sorts, and it bears resemblance to a film from last year called Disconnect with Jason Bateman. So this is a bunch of stories all tied together through the theme of technology and how it's alienating us, damaging our relationships, making us more shallow, etc. In one story, we have a girl whose mom, who's played by Jennifer Garner, is constantly checking her Facebook posts, her email, her phone, everything else, to make sure she's not doing anything teenagers shouldn't be doing, like talking to boys. Then we have a married couple played by Adam Sandler and Rosemary DeWitt, who are both unknowingly using the internet to meet people and to cheat on one another. They have a son who is secretly dating a cheerleader character whose mom is trying desperately to get her into a reality show and push her into stardom. But then she, the mom, meets a guy played by Dean Norris from Breaking Bad, and they start dating and trying to connect all these characters. He has a son who is addicted to a role-playing computer game and who is secretly dating the girl whose mom won't leave her alone. You get all that? Okay.
Very impressive, Colin. Nicely done.
Thank you. I don't
impressive.
Think I'm leaving anyone out of great importance. I think I got everybody.
Almost.
Okay, well, that's close enough.
Yeah.
So this is a movie that wants to comment on how our lives are becoming more and more meaningless as we, let ourselves be controlled by technology, or namely social media, internet porn, online dating and stuff like that, and role-playing computer games. And it's all worth commenting on, and I sort of agree where Jason Reitman and his co-writer, whose name escapes me, is coming from. But I think he's just resorting to cliches here with the stories that he's telling. You know, in movies like this, eventually someone is going to attempt suicide. The spouse is cheating on one another without either the knowing it. We've seen that before. The Jennifer Garner character, you know, the well-meaning but overprotective parent who goes too far. And, you know, and then in the middle of it all, this sort of innocent romance that takes place between the two older characters that's sort of supposed to be like the salvation to everything else that's going on, all the ugliness around them that's going on. We've seen all these things before in films like these with the multiple narratives. And, you know, I just think there's better movies like Disconnect, which is, you know, the closest comparison piece to this film. It's kind of hard not to think of it when you're watching this. And just how well that movie dealt with its subject of technology with far more interesting perspectives and far more interesting, you know, performances. It's just an all-around better film. This one, you know, I want to get behind a movie that, you know, comments on this stuff and uses quotes from Carl Sagan, you know, one of my heroes. But this just ain't it. Really misses the mark, and it's kind of unfortunate.
Okay.
It's got a great cast and a great director behind it.
All right. What about you, Eric?
I think this is a stunning train wreck of a movie, even more so just from the fact of who it's coming from, Jason Reitman, whose work I have been such a fan of over the years. I mean, I even like Labor Day, so that shows you just how far down the rabbit hole with him I'm going. And let me tell you something, the Y2K stuff in A Walk Among the Tombstones has more relevance today than anything in this movie.
Wow.
The cliches that are on display, I mean, Disconnect needs to be brought up. You know, while that movie didn't flawlessly handle everything, it did so with far more realism and far more gravity than anything in this movie. You can't tell if Reitman's going for like pure satire or if he's going for something more meaningful. But the tone of the film suggests that he's taking this material absolutely seriously. And just because you have Emma Thompson narrating the film as this sort of this bodiless voice that's, you know, sort of putting everything into perspective, that doesn't make it little children. I sat there kind of stone-faced with my mouth agape at watching everything that was going on here, because nothing was connecting to anything. Everything that happens in this movie could have happened a decade ago, and it still wouldn't have felt relevant. This movie is detached from itself, which is sort of the ultimate irony. It really is kind of one of the worst films of the year. I'm stunned by it.
Wow. Well, I haven't seen it, but as you guys remember, I'm a huge fan of Disconnect.
Yeah.
So, and when I saw the trailer for this, I was like, it looks exactly like Disconnect. So I haven't seen it, but it's always really sad when one of your favorite filmmakers lets you down.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, man. I hate when that happens.
I really do.
It sucks. All right, well, let's take a quick break, and we'll come back and talk more. Movie reviews are here, happening right now on 720 WGN, so stick around. Nick DiGilio here. We are live in the Allstate Showcase Studio, and there was just fireworks flying all over the place above the river. And so I think now that thing's over, because you end things with fireworks. That would be my guess. And it was all over the place, right out here on Michigan Avenue.
Any embers fall on the studio windows?
No, I mean there was quite a lot of fireworks going on, but it's done now.
Everybody's leaving.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. All right, we got to get back to the movie reviews here. Colin and Eric, welcome back, gentlemen.
Thank you.
All right, I'm really curious about this next one. I haven't seen it. Eric, tell us about The Dog.
Okay, The Dog, this is a film documentary that's actually playing at the Facets right now.
Yeah.
Anyone who's familiar with a little classic by the name of Dog Day Afternoon.
One of my favorite movies of all time.
Yeah, it's a pretty terrific movie. Yep. Well, this is the story about the actual guy that Al Pacino played, the guy that committed the actual robbery, and it's basically his sort of life story. It, you know, it begins, you know, with how things led up to the robbery, and was the robbery really completely about trying to get a sex change for his lover. It's a really interesting guy. you put aside the bank robbery stuff and the way he treats, you know, a few people in his life. He's really kind of a character that you'd probably want to hang out in a bar with just to hear his stories.
Yeah.
The movie, you know, follows a really good portion of his life. There's a lot of archival footage from when he was actually in prison, you know, he tells sort of the blow by blow, sometimes literally, of the day of the robbery and the night before the robbery, and some of that stuff that is talked about in dialogue in the film. Here you hear it from his, you know, his own mouth. You know, all leading up to basically to the end of his life. This is a guy that died in 2006. This movie, you know, sort of sneaks up on you in a way and sort of gets into the whole idea of whether or not celebrities should be made from criminals. This is a guy that will stand in front of that very bank and sign autographs with, you know, with a shirt that says, "I robbed this bank." So, like I said, it's a really interesting guy. It's a fascinating documentary, really well put together. It's definitely worth checking out at Facets if you get a chance.
It's at Facets right now, which is on Fullerton near Western. I'm sorry, Fullerton and Ashland. Was there a real-life Sonny?
Yes.
There was. And do mm-hmm. they talk to him? Oh, no, because he gets killed. He got killed. Yeah. Right.
I'm just like,
I was going to say, wait a minute. I totally forgot. Lance Hendrickson blows John Cazale's head off in the movie. I totally forgot. Right. Did they talk? Well, is there footage of him?
No, only pictures and stories.
Okay.
Yeah. Right. Sal Natural.
All right, cool. All right. Well, it sounds good to me, man.
Oh, you're going to love it.
Oh, I can't wait. All right. Colin, what did you think?
Yeah, it's a terrific movie, and I was kind of surprised by how little time is spent in the film on the day of the bank robbery. You know, it's just kind of a nice little middle section of the film, but there's a lot leading up to it, and there's a lot going on in its aftermath, a lot of which surprised me. I actually think the stuff that happens after, you know, the bank robbery is probably the most fascinating for me, just the you know, what the life he led in prison, you know, what happened to his celebrity status, you know, when he got out of prison. That stuff was it's great stuff. I mean, they clearly spent a lot of time making this film, and it's finally, you know, seeing the light of day. It's definitely worth checking out. It would make a great companion piece to a, you know, a Dog Day Afternoon DVD. You know, it'd be a great special edition package to have these two things together.
Definitely
go see it.
All right, man, that sounds great. I mean, Dog Day Afternoon seriously is one of my very favorite movies of all time, and Dog Day Afternoon was the movie that I saw where I realized what acting was.
Yeah,
I just remember the first time I saw that movie, I was 10 years old, or 11, whenever it came out, 75, so I was 10.
Yeah.
And I remember being in the theater and just like being, I was just marveling at how good the acting was in it. Yeah. And it's just one of my favorite movies of all time. It's such a
fascinating
story.
And let me tell you something, man, they absolutely nail the casting of Chris Sarandon.
Oh, do they?
That's all I'm going to say. My God.
All right. Okay, cool. All right, Colin, why don't you tell us about Annabelle.
Oh, all righty. Well, this is the prequel to The Conjuring from a couple summers ago, a really terrific, really wonderfully crafted haunted house thriller that we all liked. And it's that one started with a doll in the basement. And this movie gives us the backstory of that doll and the couple who come to own it. At first, it's just a doll being added to a collection of dolls owned by a young, typical American married couple in the 60s, expecting a baby. But then one night, their house gets invaded by a couple of satanic cultists, cult members, who, one of whom dies and gets her blood into the eyes of the doll as she dies. And then from there, the doll becomes possessed, I suppose, by the cult member. And then the movie turns into your basic haunted house thriller with elements of Child's Play and Rosemary's Baby and a dozen other haunted house thrillers that we've seen in the past. You know, things start making noise, bad things start happening to the baby, the wife has bad dreams, but eventually she finds solace in a bookstore where a woman played by Alfre Woodard gives her some spiritual guidance. Yeah, this is about as boring and generic a haunted house thriller as you can get. And I'm a sucker for haunted house thrillers. I like the first Paranormal Activity movie, for God's sake. So, I don't ask for much from these movies. But this was just boring. I mean, it's using all the obvious and typical scare tactics to get the audience to jump. The couple is very, very wooden, very uninteresting. And you just don't care. And it's just kind of sad to see that, a movie is as cool and as fun and as scary as The Conjuring now has this, really ill-conceived and, boring and cliche ridden prequel attached to it. It's a real shame. And the ending of the film is downright laughable and, borderline of, it is offensive. This is just a really stupid and not worth your money. Even the most diehard horror fan, should just skip this one.
Yeah. Made a ton of money last night.
Yeah.
All right. Eric, what about you?
Well, it's really stupid. I can't argue that, and I can't argue that. It certainly gets very boring by the end. This is a prequel to a prologue.
I know. Isn't that weird, man?
Yeah. The Conjuring 2 is already coming out next year, so that is happening. So in the meantime, here's Annabelle. And here's a movie that, it's hard when you have a doll, how to make the doll scary. I think they did a pretty good job with Child's Play, but in this movie they solve the problem by basically not solving the problem. Because sometimes the doll is, they say the doll is possessed, now then it's just a conduit, then sometimes there's a giant ram creature that's like just playing with the doll and making it look like it's moving and stupid stuff like that. And the baby in peril stuff in this movie is really, it really kind of upset me. I don't think a baby since Baby's Day Out has been in more peril since the child in this film. The couple on display is completely boring. I will say, though, that I think early on the director was trying a little bit to try to show that he had some skill behind the camera or trying to set up set pieces here. I think the home invasion scene is pretty decent, and I think that there's another moment where a little girl runs towards a door that I thought was kind of effective. But then it just gets completely boring. It's not building up to anything.
Yeah.
In this film, and it just by the end, I was almost falling asleep by the end of this movie.
All right, I got
the ending is pretty offensive.
Okay, I got a break, but I saw this and I'll review it after the news. So everybody, hang on. Colin and Eric are here. We're talking about new movies and reviewing the new horror film called Annabelle. News is next. Silence. Nice. Movie reviews are continuing. Coming up after 10:30, we've got Drunks in the News, brought to you by the greatest restaurant on the planet, the Gale Street Inn. We've got Straight Out of Context and Nick D's show Spies as well. And then after 11 o'clock, from HitFix.com, our buddy Dan Feinberg is going to talk all things TV and answer your questions, and we'll review some of the new shows that have premiered in the past couple of weeks. Right now, though, Colin and Eric are here, and we're doing the movie reviews, and welcome you guys back.
Hello.
All right, you guys have reviewed Annabelle, the new horror film, which is a prequel to The Conjuring, which, as you mentioned, was a movie that we all liked very much. This sucks. I will say this. I was a little freaked, and this is just because of me personally. I was a little freaked out by the home invasion thing because I just have a phobia of that.
Mm-hmm.
So that kind of worked on me. But outside of that, I mean, this is just terrible. I mean, boring and stupid and every cheap gimmick that you can possibly imagine to get people creeped out. And I happen to kind of like creepy doll movies. I like that little subgenre, you know what I mean? Especially like ventriloquist dummies. But I hated Dead Silence too. Dead Silence was terrible. But I love Magic. That's one of my favorite creepy doll movies of all time.
Dolls.
Well, that's Stuart Gordon. Yeah. So it's okay. My favorite of the Child's Play is the second one. That's my favorite of all of them. I like the first two, but the second one is my favorite of all of them. But this is just stupid and boring, and you know, the acting is bad. It's just dumb, just really dumb. So no, don't go see Annabelle. But everybody's going to see it.
Yeah.
So, all right. Well, let's move on. Now you guys are going to have some fun right now.
Colin, take her away.
Colin,
what? Oh, really?
Left behind.
All right. Well, this is a reboot of the Left Behind, the popular Left Behind series of films that were based on a novel written by two guys. The original film starred Kirk Cameron. This one stars Nicolas Cage, although not in the Kirk Cameron role. Nicolas Cage plays an airline pilot named Rayford Steele, who gets called away at the last minute to take a flight from New York to London and has to ditch his daughter, who was home from college, to visit him on his birthday. He is or was married to Leah Thompson, who has found Jesus and has since alienated everybody from her life, including her family. So him and his daughter, they're dealing with the fallout from that. While they're at the airport having this discussion, she meets a famous TV news reporter named Buck Williams. That was the Kirk Cameron role in the original. And now he's played by Chad Michael Murray. They have a nice little first date of sorts. So everything seems to be going well until all of a sudden people just start disappearing off the planet. The people who are there are now gone, except leaving nothing but a pile of clothes that they were wearing before they disappeared. All children have vanished. It's the end of the world. So now everybody's freaking out. There's rioting. There's looting. There's sense of lawlessness. And it's happened on the airplane, too, that Nicolas Cage is flying and that Chad Michael Murray is a passenger on. So everybody on the plane is trying to figure out what's going on and, you know, just posing a lot of, you know, conspiracy theories of sorts. And Nicolas Cage's daughter is sort of, you know, she's our, you know, guide through what's going on planet Earth while all this is happening. And she's just kind of wandering around looking for, you know, signs of what is going on here. And basically, it comes down to everybody who has devoted their lives to the words of the Bible or, you know, devoted their lives to Christ have been taken to heaven while everybody else is left on Earth to fend for themselves for being non-believers. So this is one of those movies that has, you know, that is geared towards its Christian audience. This has been a very popular movement lately in film. There have been a lot of movies this year that have, you know, had this sort of, you know, Christian slant, and they've been very successful with it for the most part. But this one in particular is interesting because it is using a commercially proven genre, the action thriller, the apocalyptic action thriller, as a way of, you know, luring people into the theater who might not know that there is a Christian message behind this, and basically hitting them over the head with it. This is an unbelievably, laughably absurd film. Not just in the concept, but in its execution. It has the lamest, cheapest-looking special effects. I mean, there are two plane crash sequences in this film that are just absolutely. I mean, it was like they hired a freshman year intern with a trial version of After Effects to do the special effects on this film. They're really terrible. The acting is ludicrous. The way it uses the action movie genre to sort of sell a message of faith is not just ludicrous, but it's offensive and insulting and sociopathic, I think. I would love to recommend this movie. If the movie didn't have the Christian slant to it, I would recommend it as a so bad it's good kind of thing, because we laughed a lot during the screening. I mean, a lot, especially the last half hour. My God, does this movie have a bad last half hour. It is stunning. But I can't, because what the movie is trying to do to the viewer is, I think, just is, like I said, offensive. Mm. So this is a terrible movie. Don't go see it.
Okay. Eric?
Yeah, the only thing that's really separating a movie like this and a movie like God's Not Dead from earlier this year is the fact that it is so horrendously, horrifically laugh-out-loud funny. And like Colin said, we don't want to recommend the film in any way so people spend money on this, because then God knows we're going to get left behind 2 and 3, because this one probably costs about $1.70, so it won't cost much to do the sequels. But like Colin said, someone pointed out that all the characters in this movie seem to have names out of pornos. They all seem to, you know, they're just one syllable away from buck naked, basically. And like Colin said, I mean, the message of this movie that, you know, if you don't have some sort of belief in, you know, the higher power that is God, the Christian God that is, you're not going to be taken. You are going to be, you know, damned forever to live in darkness in the hell on earth that is being created. And then I think that's a dangerous message. I mean, the co-pilot, Nicolas Cage's co-pilot, is literally wearing his religion on his sleeve. One of the stewardesses, you know, they're trying to find evidence, you know, if she believes in Jesus. And in her diary, written in big letters on one day, Bible study. You know, this movie has no sense of drama, has no sense of pacing, has no sense of what makes, you know, action filmmaking, you know, vital. It was directed by a stuntman a stunt coordinator or visual effects coordinator, Vic Armstrong, who has just absolutely no idea how to shape this material into anything. It's hysterically funny. We cannot stress that highly enough. But the stuff that goes on in this movie is offensive, hopefully people do not go out to see this movie, because I think there's a real dangerous message buried underneath all the laughter.
Okay. All right, so Left Behind, we got to take a break. We'll come back, and we're going to talk about a good movie. Colin and Eric, hang on a second, and we'll take a quick break and come back and tell you about Gone Girl. All right. Movie reviews continuing right here on 720 WGN. Nick DiGilio here. And let's get back to the movie reviews. Colin Suter and Eric Childress are with us. Eric, tell us about Gone Girl.
Okay, this is the latest film from David Fincher, based on the wildly popular novel by Gillian Flynn, a novel so popular that even I read it. And this is the story of Nick Dunn, played by Ben Affleck, who, on his the fifth anniversary of his marriage to Amy, played by Rosamund Pike, he comes home and finds what looks like a crime scene in his house. There is some damage, looks signs of a struggle. He calls the police. And she is immediately declared missing. And then what proceeds to happen is that sort of a media frenzy becomes a part of the town of, in Missouri where they now live. His wife Amy was the subject of a popular series of children's books known as Amazing Amy that were written by her parents as sort of a way to sort of improve upon sort of the mediocre life that their daughter was having as a child. But as things, as clues start to mount around the disappearance, there's some doubts raised that she might, you know, not be even missing at all, that maybe she's possibly dead, and that possibly Nick is the one responsible for that. That ends up involving some more characters, including Tyler Perry, who plays Tanner Bolt, the celebrity lawyer that is called in to help Nick with this case, and all other sort of media types around there. Ellen Abbott is played by Missy Pyle, sort of a Nancy Grace type character. His twin sister, Carrie, is played by Carrie Coon, plays Margot in the film. And then there's also another mysterious possible suspect looming about, an old boyfriend of Amy's played by Neil Patrick Harris. And here is where you, obviously we want to stop talking about the plot, because this is a plot that even, you know, those who have read the book know, is full of many, many twists and turns. But it's still kind of easy to still discuss exactly what this movie is ultimately about. Because what I, even after reading the book and especially after seeing the movie, this is one of the sort of the best condemnations of marriage, the institution of marriage that I've seen probably since The War of the Roses. You could probably throw Eyes Wide Shut in there as well. There's so many layers to everything that's going on in this film beyond just the central mystery, which is so expertly crafted by Flynn, who wrote the screenplay, and Fincher, who methodically puts things together and allows things to build, even, you know, through its almost 2.5 hour running time. It's a pretty brilliant adaptation by Flynn, who makes so many right choices in what to keep in, what to excise, how to shift little bits of the narrative around for the big screen. And then you have the performances. Ben Affleck, who perfect casting as Nick Dunn, as we one perfect line in the movie sort of sums up not just what Nick Dunn is going through, but what Ben Affleck has gone through as a career, where they say, you know, that they like me, then they hate me, now they love me again. Rosamund Pike as Amy, who we get to know through her diary entries, just as the book weaved in between who was narrating the story between each chapters. I think is very likely going to be Oscar nominated for this performance. This movie is so good that Tyler Perry is good in the movie. When Tyler Perry was cast in the David Fincher movie, you know, all eyebrows are raised. But especially sitting through the movie a second time, there's something really interesting about the casting of Tyler Perry, the sort of the real successful niche director who is now advising the movie star on how to basically tone it down and, you know, act, you know, more appropriately for the cameras. Again, there's so much to discuss in this thing, but it's the kind of thing you want to entice people into seeing the movie, because it's one of the best films of the year, if not the best film of the year that I've seen so far. But it's, you're going to want to talk about it even more by the end of it.
Yeah.
So Gone Girl.
Okay, hang on a second. We'll get Colin's thoughts and my thoughts on Gone Girl after we take a break for the news right here on 720 WGN. Ah, yes. We're wrapping up the movie reviews here. And then we'll do Drunks in the News, brought to you by the greatest restaurant on the planet, the Gale Street Inn, and then Straight Out of Context and Nick D. Show Spies. So we heard what Eric thought of David Fincher's new movie, Gone Girl. Colin, what about you?
This is, you know, anybody who's ever, like, binge-watched a really addictive TV show in, like, its first season, that's sort of like what it's like watching Gone Girl. You're just addicted to it. And when it's over, you want to see season two immediately. But, of course, there won't be a sequel. I don't think. This is, you know, this is just really... I echo everything Eric said, except for maybe it being a condemnation of marriage. I don't think the movie is anti-marriage or anything like that. I think it's anti a certain kind of marriage, much of it, you know, being related to money. This is a movie that I think is just great, pulpy, fun, where you have no idea what's going to happen next. The thing about it, this movie, is that it's when you really step back and think about it, everything that happens in it is completely absurd. But Fincher and Gillian, what's her name again?
Flynn,
do such a great job of selling it, as sophisticated entertainment. It's kind of miraculous. I think any other director who tried to attempt this material and tell the story straightforward in linear fashion, would be laughed out of the room. But the way the movie is structured, that Fincher is so good at constructing these sequences that, much like in The Social Network, that, as you have said in the past, Nick, are like sweets.
Yeah.
It just becomes really just compelling, and you forget about how unbelievable all of it is. So I definitely think this is, definitely one of the most entertaining films of the year, one of the best films of the year, and it's the one movie out right now that I can't wait to see again.
Yeah. I echo everything you guys said. I think it's actually maybe the best movie that Brian De Palma didn't make.
I've seen that from a few people. Yeah.
I thought it was magnificent. Very, very entertaining. You never know what's happening. The acting in this movie, particularly Rosamund Pike, is just tremendous. And Fincher is just a master. I mean, he's only made one movie that I don't like, and that's Benjamin Button. Every other movie... even Alien 3, I even like Alien 3, but many of his movies have topped my list every year, or at least been in my top five. And this is no exception. It's a great, great movie, a really good role for Ben Affleck too. And Tyler Perry's good in it.
Yeah.
I mean, how does that happen?
It's a good part. And he doesn't, it's just, I mean, he fits the part for some reason.
Yeah.
It just works.
Yeah, no, it totally works. Everybody in this movie. It's interesting casting, too. Neil Patrick Harris, that's an interesting casting choice there.
And
he's very good in it as well. So, I mean, this is great stuff, man. It's easily the best movie that's out right now. You've got to see it. I mean, this thing is going to get multiple nominations. No question about it.
I agree.
No question about it. One of the best movies of the year. Gone Girl. All right, what do we got next week, guys?
Oh, geez, what is next week? The 10th, we got The Judge.
Oh yeah,
next week with the Downey.
Right.
Hold on, what else is opening next week?
Alexander and the No Good Terrible.
Oh,
horrible,
the bad horrible day.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
Okay. That's next week.
Dracula Untold.
Oh God.
Dracula Untold is the one I couldn't think of.
Oh God, does that look terrible?
Oh, and Kill the Messenger with Jeremy Renner. Next week.
All right, cool. All right, well, we got some stuff to talk about. Colin, Eric, thank you guys.
Thank you.
Talk to you next week. So
hey,
there
bye.
You go. Thank you, Colin. Thank you, Eric.